Hey, it's Darren Johnson, Campus XM. Dancing with myself, Billy Idol. It's not Billy Joel. Billy Idol. Dancing with myself. A song about what? I don't know. Teenage masturbation? Something like that. I can't wait to professionalize this podcast and have standard music and standard breaks and have commercials. I have all of these things that you get in a normal podcast. Because I haven't commercialized it yet. I haven't regimented it. I don't put it out at the same time every third day or some interval. I don't have little breaks or sponsors. But I'm going to someday. The goal now is just to get out some of my ideas. Some of my ideas I publish in a newspaper called Campus News. So to have some synergy with that. And then see what happens next. I was watching an old I Love Lucy. And I don't watch it a lot. But I was watching it. I recently downgraded my cable. So Spectrum Cable, which is a big provider. They're affiliated with Time Warner Cable. They have a plan where you can just get the internet and all the broadcast channels, so like NBC, ABC, CBS, and then you get to pick 10 channels, but you can't pick like HBO. You have to pick commercial cable channels like AMC or USA or whatever. So I talked it over with the family and picked 10 channels. A couple of, they don't let you change it either. You only have 30 days to change your channels. So I'm already starting to regret it a little. There's some channels I find we're just not watching. And then every now and then there's some show I say, oh yeah, I like that show. It's back on the air. We don't have that channel. But for the most part, I'm satisfied with it because it's way cheaper than what I was paying. And I still get New York One, which is the news channel I like to watch. And they give me the local Albany news channel. And then they give me all the local channels. And then there's a bunch of far-flung channels that I didn't even know existed before, but they're in like the 500s or something like that. So you have to go like past HBO and past Showtime. Maybe it's in the 600s or 700s or something, but they're way down on the dial. So I looked for a way, because I used to record Star Treks off of BBC America, which was like channel, I don't know, 78 or something. And I used to record Star Treks because they're just like, I've seen them all before, and I could put it on, and I can just do other things while it's on. Now, yeah, I have Netflix, and I have Hulu, and I get Amazon Instant because I have Amazon Prime. Because I'm affiliated with universities, I pay half price for Prime. So if you have any .edu email address, you can get Prime. All right, so I was just puffing on a cigar. So I find these channels because I wanted to record Star Treks. And so I said, oh, BBC America, that's not worth. All they have is old reruns of Star Trek on there and Doctor Who or some crap. So I was like, that's not worth, being one of my 10 channels. Yeah, I can always go to Netflix and get old Star Trek. They show, if for those people who know the difference, they show The Next Generation and they show Voyager. So those are probably the two best, along with the original series of the Star Trek incarnations. All right, so I go on and I start looking. I'm like, oh, they show Star Trek Next Generation and Voyager on these far-flung channels. I didn't know that. So I set my DVR to record Star Trek off of those channels because sometimes I just don't want to turn on all the Netflix and stuff. And I like the randomness of getting it from TV. I like being surprised a little. I don't want to say, oh, I'm going to pick episode number 15 from season 3, where where Worf meets his father, you know, like I don't want to be like that specific. I want to be like surprised. Oh yeah, this is the episode where Picard becomes a Borg or something like that. I could be pleasantly surprised. And in a way, you know, when people talk about like top 10 TV shows of all time, they usually don't put Star Trek in there or any of the incarnations of Star Trek. And I think that's because the nerds have kind of ruined what is Star Trek. They have these conventions and they wear the ears and they speak Klingon and they've kind of ruined what is Star Trek. But if you break it down, Star Trek is like, it's a good show. It has good production values, great acting, and it has provocative scripts. Like the scripts make you think about, you know, what is time? What is an afterlife? What is reincarnation? When does an android become a human? You know, these types of things that we're wrestling with to this day. And a lot of the ideas from Star Trek came true. Like our cell phones mimic the... I have to relight the cigar because I'm talking too much. Our cell phones mimic their communicators. And our health diagnostic machinery is similar. And now universal translators. You know, how on Star Trek is, how they explain away why people can all understand each other, even though they're from different races, is they say, well, those little, the little A symbol on their chest, the little badge that they have in Next Generation, etc., that automatically translates whatever people are saying so that they hear it. They hear it automatically. Someone's revving their engine. As you know, I'm in car studio. I think we like this. Relighting a cigar is the rules of three. You need three puffs. Okay. So, this guy's been revving some stupid engine all day today. And he peels out. That's his thing. I was on, like, an important phone call before, and the guy was revving the engine really loud. And then the person next door to me owns, he doesn't own it, but he works for an oil company. He brings the oil truck home. So he's backing it up. It's going beep, beep, beep. I'm trying to make, like, a big deal for my business, Campus News, on the phone. The dog's inside barking, so I have to go outside. And then I had an ad on Craigslist for, I had all these pallets because the newspapers get delivered to my house on pallets, wooden pallets. And I wanted to get rid of them. I didn't want these things around. So I put an ad on Craigslist that people could pick them up for free. And so some guy shows up to pick it up, and he has like a Volkswagen Jetta or something like that. And he says, yeah, I'm going to use this for composting platforms or something. I don't know what he was talking about. But he had like a Volkswagen Jetta with a ski rack on it. So he had like was in my driveway for a half hour, tying it onto the roof, five pallets onto the roof of his Jetta. He lived a couple miles away, and there's a lot of back roads around here, so he could have just taken the back roads home. But it wasn't like the smartest move in the world, I don't think, to be taking these pallets on the top of a Volkswagen Jetta. And, you know, so you get the oil truck and the guy with his hippie wife and, like, little kid and putting pallets on a thing. And I'm trying to make, like, this phone call to expand Campus News, to develop a new business partnership with, a possible new client that might bring in a new revenue source for Campus News, because we can't just rely on the print newspaper forever. And then all these noises are going on. You can't win, dog. And then all kinds of things. So I couldn't win. This is why I need an office. And I'm going to get an office pretty soon. All right. So in any case, Star Trek, they understand the people instantaneously. So I started DVRing these far-flung channels. I don't even know what they're called. But I started looking around them. And they had I Love Lucy on there. I was like, oh, wow. I haven't seen I Love Lucy in a while. Now, I know I Love Lucy's on Hulu. But I don't know. Sometimes I like to see things on TV. So I'm scrolling around, and I see, all right, this I Love Lucy doesn't look that interesting. And I remember watching in reruns. I'm not that old that I Love Lucy was ever new to me. But it was like 20, 30 years old. And interesting tidbit, Lucille Ball saved Star Trek. She was the one who funded the original Star Trek through Desilu Productions. Desi was her husband. And her production company saved Star Trek. So you could thank her of all people. But I remembered it being, like, as a kid, this progressive show, I Love Lucy. And, you know, because Lucy wore pants a lot. No, that was a thing. And that was big in that era. And she kind of, like, was loudmouth and bossy. And she had an Hispanic husband. You know, that's very progressive for the era. Although Hispanic was generally acceptable in the 50s if the person looked more Spanish than, let's say, indigenous Mexican or something. And he was Cubano, so he probably had Spanish lineage at the very least. He wasn't from, like, the Aztecs or something like that. The guy with the loud truck is back. All right, so there's that. But watching these, they're really not as progressive as I thought. Like, there's a lot of financial abuse that Desi puts on his housewife, Lucy. Like, if she wants to buy something, she has to generally beg to just buy something basic. And allegedly he runs, like, this big, you know, Copacabana club or something in Manhattan, at the peak of Manhattan, you know, the 1950s, when Manhattan was bigger than it is now, when Manhattan was Manhattan. And he's supposedly their big band leader, and he doesn't have tons of money, but she has to, like, you know, scrimp and save over every little thing and beg him, or try to trick him, because he's so frugal with the money, and she has to try to trick him out of money. And I think there's even an episode where she's bad, and he spanks her. He's always threatening to punish her, too. So I guess it's not as progressive as we thought. But I guess for that era, it was somewhat groundbreaking. And it was a number one show. It was like a hit show when people actually all watched the same hit show. Gotta relight again. All right, so scrolling around, I see I Love Lucy is with, I go through the guide, and I see that Orson Welles goes on an episode of I Love Lucy. And I go, okay, Orson Welles, this is like the best of all worlds. I Love Lucy, a hit number one show, and, you know, comedic genius. I don't think there's too many comedians of her level right now on TV. You know, maybe like a Jim Carrey or something like that might be of her level. So comedic genius and Orson Welles. And my thoughts are, this caught Orson Welles in the 50s when I Love Lucy was. Now, as you know, Orson Welles had a long career. And around, I think it was 1938, was his War of the Worlds, where on the radio he adapted the Wells novel, the H.G. Wells novel, different Wells, no relation, spells it with one less E, novel War of the Worlds. Now, I did the same thing. I did an adaptation of War of the Worlds for the stage in college, in grad school. All right, in any case, it's good, too. You should, you know, send me an email. I'll send you the script. And Orson Welles, in 1938, had that. He had also put on an all-black production of, I think, Macbeth, one of the Shakespearean plays. I think it was Macbeth. And on Broadway. So he put on an all-black production in the 30s on Broadway. All right, and he had this radio play that made people think aliens were really landing on Earth. And some people committed suicide based on this. Created hysteria. Because people are dumb. They've always been dumb. Instead of just, like, listening and going, oh, all right. Like, the first time I heard Phil Hendry. You ever hear Phil Hendry? He's still around, but he hasn't been what he was. But pre-9/11, Phil Hendry had a radio show where he would do all the voices, and he would come up with provocative subjects. Like, he would, you know, pretend to be a football coach talking to Phil Hendry, And the football coach would be like, he'd be a bully to the kids, and he would say things like that he would do to the kids. And he would just say, you know, it was for winning and stuff like that. Or he would be a homosexual journalist, and he had an agenda. So everything he talked about, he would tie into homosexuality. Or, you know, he'd be some kind of like, you know, he'd be, let's see, what were some of his other characters? Maybe a sex addict or someone, you know, usually like a guy who owned a restaurant, and he would talk about like how he abuses his employees. And it would always start off like a general radio show, like, yeah, here's Ted from Ted's Fish Fry or whatever, steakhouse. And he owns a business. All right, I'm going to take a second break, just a second. All right, I'm back. Now I'm going to have to piece this together in frickin' Audacity. Someone pulled up and I had to deal with something. So, all right, Orson Welles. And top of his game. And then Citizen Kane. All right, considered by many the greatest movie of all time. And I recorded that off of the TV too. And I have it on my DVR and I haven't gotten rid of it. Like, my DVR becomes this, you have to make choices eventually. Like, what are you going to keep and what are you not going to keep? And that was one I decided to keep. Had to relight again. All right, so Citizen Kane, of course, you know. And then time goes by. And he does a bunch of other movies, Magnificent Ambersons, things like that. Kind of loses favor, is known as a, you know, blowhard maybe, or know-it-all, or doesn't work well with others. But he always organized troops. He organized the play. He organized his... War of the Worlds wasn't his only radio play. He did tons of them. You know, he would adapt things. And he obviously had read Shakespeare. And so we get to this point, it's the 50s, and he's on I Love Lucy. And he goes on I Love Lucy. And, all right, he's starting to gain weight here. Now, those of you who only knew Orson Welles at the end of his life, let's say the 70s and 80s, he had grown obese, you know, obese. And he was maybe an alcoholic. He started doing wine commercials for Ernest and Julio Gallo. Cheap, you know, wine and these big jugs. And his line was, I will sell no wine before it's time. And he had a golden voice. And he would do voiceovers. By the end, all he was really doing was voiceover type stuff. So he did he did the voiceover work on this movie that scared me when I was a kid. It was based on the works of Nostradamus. And he... It, you know, said, oh, nuclear winter is going to come by 1992, and you know, in his golden voice, and an Arab in a blue, whatever Arabs wear, and he's going to, blue robe or whatever it is they wear, is going to wreak havoc on the East and the West, and until the two countries at the poles, you know, connect and make peace. And that meant the Soviet Union and the United States. This evil, you know, Satan wouldn't be conquered. And it was, you know, so as a kid, I was like, oh, wow, you know, the end of the world's coming pretty soon. Nostradamus predicted it. And Orson Welles, you know, probably just for enough money to buy some swill, was doing voiceover work. So he didn't really end that well. He tried to do a talk show. It just wasn't all that popular. He looked bigger than the desk. And there's one where he had on Andy Kaufman on his talk show. But he ended up being, in those days, talk shows actually had literate people on there. And he would be a guest. So he was kind of burnt out by the time most of you remember him. If you weren't around in the 40s and 50s, you might remember Orson Welles less desirably. You know, you might remember him as a obese, drunk, cranky person. And really, he was more than that. And it's always too bad that we remember people how they are at the end of their life, you know, when they're not who they were, their memory's not what they were, and they're kind of feeble, and they're like children in a way, and they're sick. And we tend to remember the person like that, like how we last saw them. But we should try to remember people when they're at their peak. So enter the 1950s, he's on I Love Lucy, and the premise of the show was kind of stupid. It was, he was in town anyway, selling his, he did albums of him performing Shakespeare, and he would sell these albums. Can you imagine trying to sell that today? Like, oh yeah, you know, hey, Virgin Records, I'd like to come out with, a Shakespearean, me reading Shakespeare. How about that? It'll sell millions of copies. You know, and he sold a lot of copies of that. Orson Welles reading Shakespeare. And they show him in this episode with tons of people, especially all women, I think, or mostly women, like all like clamoring around him as if he were the Beatles. And they all wanted a copy of this Shakespearean album. And can you imagine that today? Like average people wanting a Shakespearean album. And who is our person today who's like Orson Welles? A well-read celebrity. Like, who's a well-read celebrity today? Can you even name one? Can you name a well-read celebrity? Even celebrities who write books, those are all ghostwritten and they're poorly done. They all kind of, they have the same template. Like, is there a well-written, well-read celebrity? And who is our Orson Welles today, like, that we all respect? Now we celebrate, like, you know, Wiz Khalifa, who just goes, every, like, in a song, and he calls it a song, and that's his song. Someone like that, DJ Khaled, you know, that's who we celebrate today. Those are the people that we celebrate. People that just are dumbing down the culture. And back then, people who were raising up the culture were celebrated. So, there goes that loud truck again. So Orson Welles, he's on there. And the premise is he was in town. And also, he was going to do a magic show, I think at the same club that Ricky worked at. You know, maybe he was going to do a magic show. Or he was it was a magic show for charity. And he was in town and going to do it. So the guy not only knew Shakespeare, not only did the radio play, which he mentions in I Love Lucy, that he did, he called it the Martian play. He did War of the Worlds, and he did Citizen Kane, which probably by the 50s maybe yet hadn't been recognized for its genius because there were other movies and color was starting to hit and things like that. So maybe a black and white movie like Citizen Kane hadn't been rediscovered yet. But here was a guy who did great stuff, and here we are a little bit later on in his life. He must be in his 40s by here. And he's doing a magic show. He's chomping on a cigar. And I thought to myself, this is what middle-aged, overweight, because he wasn't wildly overweight in the 50s, he was starting to become overweight. He was a little overweight. In Citizen Kane, he was a healthy-looking guy. He's bigger than everyone else, round face, but he had broad shoulders. But when you have broad shoulders, sometimes that evens out, especially if you come into money and you start to drink wine and smoke cigars and such. I should know. So I'm thinking this is what every middle-aged guy should kind of aspire to. You know, he still had all his hair, and he became more barrel-chested rather than, you know, you could see that he was starting to get a little bit of a, maybe the beginnings of a double chin, but not quite yet. And, but he still had his class and dignity about him, and he was able to recite Shakespeare during his magic show. And Lucy wanted to, she had invited her high school drama teacher from Jamestown, New York, which is where she's really from, to the magic show because she wanted her high school music teacher to see her do Shakespeare. But when she got to the magic show, she realized she didn't have a speaking part. So it was all Orson Welles who had the speaking part. She was just supposed to be like the assistant in the magic show. Very convoluted plot, I agree. And Ricky was trying to keep her away from this magic show. He was going to buy a plane ticket for her, too, because he felt that she always embarrassed him around celebrities. And so he was going to buy a plane ticket for her to go to Florida with little Ricky. And he said, I'll meet you down there. He didn't want her to know that she could be in the magic show with Orson Welles, who had wanted to, he took a liking to her. So I'm thinking, like, this is how a middle-aged guy should be. He should be understand how to do a lot of things, be well-read, you know, carry yourself in a respectable manner. And, you know, yeah, you could still do the things guys do. You could smoke cigars and you can, you know, wear a suit and have nice hair. But it's all right to put on a few pounds and just carry yourself in a respectable way and keep putting work out there. But Lucy had invited her high school drama teacher, who ended up being in the audience, from Jamestown. The other famous person from Jamestown, New York, is Natalie Merchant from the 10,000 Maniacs trivia right there. All right, so Lucy goes to, brings, you know, so she feels like the need to do Shakespeare. So he has her hypnotized in his magic show, and she decides to break into doing Romeo and Juliet. And she does the Juliet, and he's trying to shut her up. You know, he's like, Orson Welles is like, you know, hey, you're not supposed to speak. You're supposed to be hypnotized. And she's doing Romeo and Juliet. So it's kind of funny. And this is like, you know, a jack of all trades, where he's a Renaissance man. He's able to do magic and Shakespeare and comedy all at once and smoke a cigar at the same time while on stage, and people are clapping for him, and people go to his record signings where he's signing his Shakespeare records. And, you know, then he probably went off and directed a movie or something like that. That's like something like every guy should aspire to, or every person should aspire to be like the stately person that has like a certain level of respectability. So that was what I recorded on some far-flung channel. And I thought it was interesting. It made me want to, then I queued up afterwards Magnificent Ambersons, because I haven't seen it in a while, on I think it's on Netflix. So I haven't watched it yet, but I saw it originally, and you can see like a lot of his, if you think Quentin Tarantino has great camera shots, he got a lot of stuff by studying old masters like Orson Welles. So Orson Welles, I don't know if it's good to be like him today, where you're good at a lot of different things, or to just specialize, but he was good in a lot of different things. So that was Orson Welles. And, you know, going back to his War of the Worlds, if you remember how the aliens died in War of the Worlds, it was a human virus. And it was kind of, it was an interesting plot. And if the people had listened to the whole radio play, they would have realized at the end of it, the aliens die. And then they wouldn't have killed themselves. So I guess people ran out of their house in a panic, and some people killed themselves. They swallowed all the pills in their medicine cabinet. In those days, it was probably like Valium or something. They took all their Valiums and like, oh my God, the aliens are coming. Like, who would do that? Who would panic like that? And, you know, maybe it's like social Darwinism right there. If you have a relative who was one of those people, send me an email. I'll interview you. All right. So, you know, that's what killed those aliens, a human virus, like the flu virus or something. The aliens landed from Mars and they were taking over the world, and then one of them got a cold and started coughing and died, and then they all died. So that was the end of the War of the Worlds. It was a quick war. 2-hour war. And how he does the radio play is real time. It's like, oh, now they've landed in a field near Ithaca, New York. Oh, let me talk to our correspondent there in Ithaca. Yes, this is the correspondent over in Ithaca, New York. We have had an alien land, and he's coming out of the ground. His eyes are glowing. Oh, no! You know, that was the whole radio play. You can listen to it on YouTube or something like that. So, on Hulu, I'm watching The Strain, and it probably didn't catch on. I looked up its ratings. It lasted 4 seasons, had somewhat good reviews and ratings in its first season. It was on FX channel, and it didn't really grow from there. It shrunk year after year, but it has a lot of money. It has a lot of effects, and it's about like this alien type race, but they come from the inside of the earth because they'd been buried since the time of the pyramids, and they tried to make a go of it during World War II in the Nazi concentration camps, and they're like these dark, shadowy people, but they also have vampire type, and I think this show might have falsely got tied into the vampire thing. They have vampire type thirst, but they aren't quite vampires. They have like this giant tongue that comes out of, they take over humans, and their physiology changes, and then they try to, you know, suck the life out of other humans, It's kind of zombie-esque, and it's kind of vampire-esque, and it's kind of mystical, and it's kind of like alien invasion type. A little bit of everything. And I avoided it because it was called The Strain. It was on a far-flung channel that I don't watch. It's not one of my top 10 channels. And I avoided it because it was, I didn't want to watch, like, I thought it would be like the movie Contagion, where people go on a plane and they get sick and then they spread it and then there's like this bird flu going all over the country and people die and that's it. But this adds a whole mystical element to it. And, but it's well written and unlike Walking Dead, where it's just tedium and it's just like, why are these people? We know nothing about the virus or how far it spread or anything like it. This they explain all along the way. They explain, oh yeah, now the virus spread to Philadelphia and this is what happened. Riots happened and looting and, the National Guard was called and they do like newscasts all the time. And they'll use, like, New York One Acres when they're in New York. And the first three seasons are all in New York, so it's all New York locations. It's like, now we're in Red Hook. Now we're on Staten Island. And they kill off main characters, you know, good deal. I'm not sure why this show didn't catch on. Maybe because the characters, there's not, like, a Daryl Dixon, like, on Walking Dead, or like, a lovable loser type character. Or Rick, or, you know, Rick's kid, or something like that, Carl. There aren't, like, these likable characters. The kid in The Strain is a total jerk. He causes, like, a nuclear bomb to explode in New York City, and he's a total jerk. And the mother gets taken over early. The mother looks like a young Courtney Cox. And the mother gets taken over early by these creatures, and she's co-opted. But the kid keeps siding with the mother, and even though she's co-opted, and he's, like, a total jerk, causes so much mayhem. And the father, whose name is Ephraim, he's a scientist with the CDC, he shaves his head early in the series. And he was a good-looking guy before that, but then he looks kind of goofy throughout. Maybe they were trying to do, like, a Breaking Bad thing where Walter shaved his head and became something else. But the show is, the show has a lot of, at least they explain away all the weird stuff. And they try to, and it is well-written, like, something that happens in one series, like, they'll mention something, like, a sound that, debilitates, it's played, and some people, like, younger people are affected more than older people, and they explain that in an episode. I was like, okay, that's just a throwaway thing they mentioned. Then, like, five episodes later, a loud sound plays, and you see all, like, the Generation X and, or the Millennials or Generation Z type people feeling different degrees of pain. And then there's an old guy who's just standing there. Why is everyone bothered by this? And it's true that certain sounds affect people differently at certain ages. So it has a lot of, like, military science in it and a lot of geopolitics and a lot of Big Brother-esque type stuff, because eventually, not to spoil too much, but eventually, you know, it does go four seasons. So you have to assume that the creatures make, advances, and it has, like, a lot of Big Brother-esque type stuff, because these creatures tried to take over during the Holocaust with the Nazis, and they didn't succeed, but they do create, like, a Nazi-esque type society with these weird creatures later on, and they harvest people, and they harvest people that have B-positive blood, because I guess the vampire aspect of the show, they like that kind of blood. At one point, they fill a whole swimming pool full of blood. The whole movie is like a bad dream. Like, if you have a bad dream, you got all liquored up and you had a bad dream. It's like a 45-hour bad dream if you watch this whole thing, or 60 hours or whatever it is. And it's really addictive. So give it a chance. It's on Hulu. And it is, I have the cheap Hulu plan that's only like $5 or $6 a month, but they throw commercials in there. And I almost welcome the commercials because this show is so brutal. Like, I need a break now and then. And, but it's on Hulu. It's called The Strain. And think about that. And what would Orson Welles do today if he had to, if he had that kind of funding to do a movie? Because in those days, they just did everything on a shoestring. And this the show that had middling ratings had enormous budget. They could crash New York City police cars into taxi cabs and have the CGI to blow up the Statue of Liberty and all kinds of crazy stuff. So give this a look. It's a great near future science fiction-y hybrid of a show that doesn't really fit into any genre, and it's definitely gory and horror. I wouldn't say horror-y, but that sounds weird. So give that a look-see on Hulu. All right, so here's your assignment. Go on Hulu, watch The Strain, then go to the episode where Orson Welles is on I Love Lucy, which is also on Hulu, so you can find it there. So those are your assignments. Then send me an email. Go to campusxm.com. Find my email address there, or write to campusxm@cccn.us, and I will be there. I will be there, and I will respond, and you will love it. Until next time, Campus XM, signing out.